Velkommen, kære lyttere. Du har kastet dig over den danske discgolf podcast. Vi taler discgolf i et væk, vi søger den perfekte linje, og vi giver dig drive til dagen. Følg os på Facebook og Instagram, hvor du kan følge med i processen. Du kan komme med ønsker til gæster og emner. Der vil være konkurrencer og mange flere upshots. Dette afsnit er sponsoreret af Kaffeklubben. Drive ind forbi www.kaffevogne.dk. Brug rabatkoden PODCAST og få 20% på dejlig kaffe fra Sigafredo. Kære lyttere, vi er godt i gang med den danske discgolfhistorie. Men inden vi kryber op i næste årti, så er det tid til et bonusafsnit. Så vi skal en tur til Amerika.
Scott Stokely, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'm very honored to have you here. A bit starstruck, actually.
Aw. It just means I'm old. I've been around.
Hey, to me, you're a legend. True legend.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, I'm doing this podcast. This is the sixth episode, and... Till now, I've been concentrating about the Danish disc golf history, but I think we need a little break now. So that's why we're doing this bonus interview with you.
Okay, sounds good, man. I can talk world disc golf history.
Yeah, I know. But first of all, to all the listeners, could you please mention the fun facts about you and your background?
All right. So I played my first round of disc golf on the world's first course when it was the only course in the world. So I was there when it started on permanent courses. The sport had been around before then, object courses. There was experiments with different types of, not really baskets, but different ideas for what baskets would become. So I wasn't there for the origin of disc golf or frisbee golf, we called it back then, but the first course. I toured in the 90s. I won 17 world and national titles in disc golf and distance. I never won open pro singles worlds. I finished second place a couple times, but a bunch of world pairs titles, national, blah, blah. I had the Guinness World Record for the longest throw of a flying disc in 95. I broke my own record in 98. And then I set the world sidearm record in 2001. And I wrote the first book on disc golf throwing technique, released a bunch of instructional DVDs back before YouTube. They're not good. They're collector's items because they're pretty bad. But you know, at the time there was nothing else out there, so I mean it was better than nothing, I guess. And as far as the teaching, back in the 90s, there was very little teaching in the sport. There were a couple people teaching frisbee at college, and there were obviously local pros doing things locally. So I wasn't the first person to teach disc golf. But what I was the first to be able to do is I came up with the idea of traveling around the country, going to different cities and different clubs, and doing the throwing clinic. Mm-hmm. Go up there and you demonstrate backhand, sidearm, putting, answer questions. And I ended up going to 220 cities around the U.S. before any other touring pro had gone to even one. So I created this whole traveling clinic model, eventually figured out how to make some money off it. There was very little money in tournaments back then. Even now, it's not a lot, but it's better. And so I created this model of teaching, and I loved everything about it. And then my daughter was born in 2001. I took 13 years off to be her, and then I came back to the sport and got involved in teaching again, doing clinics. Love teaching special needs. I've done 280 cities where I taught kids and adults with autism, Down syndrome, physical disabilities. So that's a big part of what I love to do, is work in the special needs community. And so now I'm back out teaching again. I'm doing clinics every, probably once a week, on the road, but now I'm doing full day seminars. I just posted 42 of them. All 42 are all sold out. I'm about to post 30 more.
And with 500 plus clinics I have on my paper here, what gives you the drive to keep on doing that?
So first and foremost, the alternative is working a regular job, being in a cubicle. So I love disc golf. This is my life. It's my family. It's my passion. But I also don't want to live any other way. Mm-hmm. So probably the biggest thing is what are my options? My options are do something I like less. So it's what I enjoy the most. But I get a lot of reward out of teaching. I love giving someone the ability to do something that's going to make them enjoy their favorite thing more for the next 40 years of their life. Like, that's special. Like, I consider that a really big deal. I think that's far more important than any job that I could do. Hmm. Because people like this, they love this game, and this game can be so frustrating and so challenging. It should always be challenging and frustrating at times. But if your technique is bad, it's frustrating always. Hmm. And so I just love passing on the information. I also like the fun of breaking down how the sport is taught, because there's so much information out there, and it's, you know, everyone watching knows most of it is either not taught well, or sometimes it's bad information, but sometimes it's good information, but just not explained how to do it properly. So I love breaking it down, and I call it the Scott Stokely disc golf method, but it's a process to get there that works.
Is it? And that's kind of your disc golf philosophy. When I follow you around on YouTube, social media, etc., you seem teaching disc golf so easy, which I think it's not. I'm a disc golf instructor. I do a little bit myself. So, and I like the thing that keeps people like think they are in charge. You know, I did that with the disc, and that keeps me happy. Mm-hmm. And makes me happy about it. But the thing that struck me is that thing you are going. You have this simple is more kind of.
It's simple as everything. Mm-hmm. If you talked about, like, I'm sure, I don't know this, but there's probably entire books written on the topic of how to shoot free throws in basketball. If you read an entire book on how to shoot free throws in basketball, you're going to be worse. Like, there's no way that's going to make you make free throws. What will make you make free throws is one paragraph. Square up your feet, bend your knees, put your elbow at 45 degrees, open your hand, flip your wrist. Done. There is nothing else about shooting free throws than one paragraph. And that's probably the bad example, free throws, but putting in ball golf. Putting in ball golf is line up 90 degrees. The only thing that moves is your shoulder. You keep your head down. You draw the club back. You hit it as hard as you need to get there. It's one paragraph. If you read a 300-page book on how to putt in ball golf, I believe that will make you worse. I mean, it's not. It's one paragraph. It's one paragraph, and then go out and do that thing.
So you used those 500-plus clinics to cook that down?
No, I actually don't think that teaching clinics taught me a thing about teaching, or at least not much. I've always done private lessons. So I think I was the first person out there to actually do paid private lessons. I used to charge $50 for a lesson back in the 90s when I started. But in the last 3 years, I've done 1,200 private lessons.
Wow.
And in those 1,200 private lessons, that is the only place I learned how to teach, because every single theory I had about how to do something was nonsense if when I explained it to somebody, they couldn't do it.
Hmm.
Right? Yeah. So I could explain one thing and people could do it. And then we get to the next step and I explain this and people can't do it. That means I wasn't teaching it right. Because it doesn't matter what my opinion is. I could think I'm teaching it perfectly. It's irrelevant. All that matters is, can the person do what I'm telling them to do? If they can't, it's bad teaching. If they can do it, it's good teaching. Hmm. So I learn how to teach every single thing differently if I wasn't doing it right or if they weren't getting it. And then eventually I just fine-tuned this process where now I can get every single person to do what I'm teaching. But it just comes with experience. It's just wisdom that comes with it, with doing.
Hmm.
And I didn't know how much I didn't know until I started focusing on doing 4 private lessons every single day. That's when I realized where the gaps were. But there's no gaps anymore. Now I feel pretty confident.
Did that change your own play?
Yes. Oh my gosh. 100% it changed my own play because, well, number one, I can't throw differently than I'm teaching. Like, how would I explain that? So when I look back at my, if I look back at me playing in the 90s, I don't throw like that anymore. I didn't throw correctly. Very few of us did. And by very few of us, I mean, like we didn't know. It was a new sport and we were evolving. And so I did things back then that were wrong. I did not know how to throw finesse. I was not the best putter. I mean, I guess that wasn't bad. I did all right. But compared to today's game, my putting went back in the 90s, wouldn't have kept up, not even close. And so I had to apply the things that I taught to me, first because I need to be doing what I teach, but also because what I'm teaching is right. I'm teaching the right way to throw. So for me to say that I'm different would be very arrogant, right? So now I have to apply it. So as of last year, and I don't, probably sounds like I'm making excuses. I had some health issues earlier this year, but last year I went out on tour. I had a 980 something rating when I went out on tour. Last year, by the end of the year, I brought my rating up to 1,010. And at 51 years old, doing something for 40 years, you're not supposed to improve 25 ratings points from age 49 to age 50. Like, that's not supposed to happen. I brought my rating up 25 points at that age after doing it for so long because I was doing the things that I was teaching. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm a better putter now than I was when I played every single day and trained. But now I'm putting right. Nice. So I wish I could go back in time and do some lessons for me back in the 90s.
So what would your golden advice to every disc golf instructor in the world be?
Private lessons. You don't know how to teach until you do private lessons. Every YouTube videos are theory. They just are. You have to work one-on-one people, and you have to get the feedback of what approaches you teach work and what approach doesn't work. My way of teaching is not the only right way to teach. Absolutely not. You can teach totally different than me and have it be the right way to teach, but you don't know that until you've actually done it and seen it work or seen it not work.
Mm-hmm.
Like a quick story. I had there's a person that's going to be going out. I'm going to be announcing this soon. I got my first trained instructor who's going to be out also on the road teaching the Scott Stokely disc golf method. And there's going to be other instructors who are teaching my method out there as well. That's part of my process. I'm building a team of people. This player is a 1,010 rated pro. He teaches disc golf full time. He's super talented and he teaches full time and he's good at it, but he's not as experienced as, well, he's just newer at it. Right. But he's very good. And he asked me one time or not asked me, he told me that he loves teaching. He loves seeing people grow and improve. He said, this is his words. He said, the most frustrating thing though, is he's like, when I'm working with someone and I'm trying to teach them what to do and they just can't do it, he says, how do you handle that, Scott? And my answer was, that doesn't happen to me anymore. but it used to, right?
Then what did you do?
I just trial and error. I kept trying things until they worked. You know, like I there are certain things that are easy fixes, but certain things aren't. Like, do you know, you're familiar with rounding, right?
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with rounding because I made up that word. Back when I wrote the book on throwing technique, I had to invent words to describe things people did. So I sat there when I wrote my book making up slang terms. So like I came up with rounding. So rounding is a really difficult thing to fix because as soon as you get a person reaching back straight, that doesn't solve rounding because the natural tendency when they're throwing is to then curl right before they throw again. Okay, that's a big challenge. That took me a long time to figure out how to fix rounding because no one does it on purpose. And even when you put their body right, at the moment of throw, things happen so quickly that they fall back on that wrong technique. Well, how do you get someone to change something that they don't realize they're doing? Right? That's the challenge. And after a while, eventually what I figured out, I mean, I'm talking 20 years after I tried to solve rounding, I finally figured out that we can fix rounding with footwork. That if you plant your foot when the disc is in a certain position, there is no time to then curl your arm before you throw. If your footwork timing is correct, rounding will go away. Took 20 years to figure that out. But now someone says they have a problem with rounding, they can't fix it, and I can tell them, well, I'll fix it in about 2 minutes. But 20 years of not knowing how to do it before I could figure out that solve. So again, that's where it just comes with experience. You just, theory is just, that's what the word means. It's theory until you do hands-on.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Wow. So again, I've been following you around on social media, and is it correct that you have been a little away from doing tournaments for a couple of years, and then you have a very big plan this year?
Yes. Well, I took some time off. It's long life story, but I traveled for 2.5 years, and then I went back home for 3 years, and I sold software and did really well. This is actually, I think this is a record, and I'm only going to say this because I think it's, people will find this funny. I think I probably set the record for quitting the highest paid job to go out and play frisbee golf, but whatever that is. But I was my last year working, I made $130,000 selling software, and in the middle of the day in December, just in the middle of the day, I just froze and I pushed away from my desk and I just went, I just locked up. I can't do this anymore. I got to get back out on the road. I was making great money, totally comfortable, buying toys, whatever you want to call it. And then I just said, that's not who I am. I hate this. And I took off to travel again. So I have been playing tournaments since then. Last year was weird, of course, you know.
How is life in that pandemic situation on the road?
So it's interesting. I was doing all these private lessons. Excuse me. And in March, when things shut down, I switched to doing all my lessons by video. And my girlfriend and I, we ended up, got an RV. We went out to the desert where we had Wi-Fi. And we spent about 5 months completely isolated from everybody. And after a couple months of the quarantine starting, they started to say, hey, I think we might be safer. We might be okay if we're outside, if we're socially distanced, if we wear masks in groups, but when we're outside, we're probably going to be okay. And I said, that's fantastic. Let's wait and see what you guys say next week. Because, you know, every week it was changing. So I wasn't doing anything in person, no teaching, nothing, no clinics. But after about 3 more months, and the data kept coming in that says, hey, when you're outdoors, as long as you're not, you know, being stupid, you're probably going to be okay. Then I started to feel comfortable coming back out again. And that's when I started doing things in person again. But I take it very serious because I'm in a different city every day. I am somebody who could be responsible for bringing something from one city to another city and harming somebody. And I don't take that lightly at all. I was very cautious before I started doing that. When I do less, well, I don't do private lessons now. I don't have time. I'm doing just groups. But even now, when I do groups, even when I'm taking money, we're outside. I'm masked up. You know, if I get close to anybody, we mask up. And you know, even like when I'm adjusting their shoulders, I use a disc and I touch their shoulders. I mean, anything I can do to take those reasonable precautions. So that's really what's changed. But I think what we're finding is that, and the reason why disc golf is going so well, is that if we just take reasonable precautions, our sport's okay to play. Hmm. And so that's kind of what the culture's been. So people in disc golf in the U.S., for the most part, have been really good. When they at players' meetings, people are masking up. When they get onto their carts, they don't. Some people are more responsible than others. Hmm. But that's the way, that's humans, right? I mean, not everybody perfect, but I could be responsible for me. And, you know, I don't high five. I just, you know, keep a little distance politely. And but everyone's fine with it. No one thinks it's rude.
Do you feel a huge boom in disc golf, the sport, as well as in?
It's insane.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. And I've been here for the whole life of the sport. It's absolutely crazy. I posted my 42 seminars, all 42 of them sold out, with 600 people on the wait list right now for more seminars. And that was off basically one post.
Wow. That tells you something.
Yeah. And I'm not charging small money. I'm charging real money for this. And so, it's been amazing. I mean, you know, tournaments fill up within 90 seconds.
Yeah.
It's been the best thing in the world for disc golf, and it's unfortunate that something so tragic has to be the catalyst for this. But I'm always glasses half full. Like, I try to find the positives in everything. So if it benefited our sport, it benefited mountain biking, it benefited RVing, you know, it tore some families apart, but it brought some families together. Like, I think there's a positive in everything.
People are making babies as well.
That's a negative. We don't need more babies.
No.
We can use less babies. You know, I even think, I've even thought, this is like, I'm such, people who are really optimistic can be very annoying. And I've been told I can annoy people by being optimistic. But even people that are forced to like quarantine at home with each other, married couples, and the next thing you know, 6 months later, they're divorced. My thought is, well, you're probably getting divorced in 5 years. I think it's fantastic that you got to get it over with in 6 months. I mean, I'm serious. I'm sorry to say it like that, but like there's a bright side to almost everything. At least I try to find it.
Yeah. So you are very positive.
I can't exist in a negative space. Life is too short. I believe we live once.
Yes.
I'll never get upset at a tournament. I'll never get upset at anything. Like, I don't get mad at people. I mean, there's no point.
I just read something about you today. You're not getting angry, mad, upset on the course.
No, I haven't got angry over playing poorly since 1989. I don't ever get upset. Why? We're playing with frisbees in a park. Like, I mean, what is there to be mad about? Like, there's real world problems out there. I don't consider me playing bad disc golf to be a real problem. I just don't. I just cannot see how that is a bad thing. It is not. It just isn't. It's frisbee golf. I did get angry once at a player for their behavior. Hmm. And even then, after I got angry, it took like a lot to get me upset at them for the way they were acting. But even then, I felt like I could have done better because I still didn't need to get angry. Like, I still was not in control of myself. I yelled at him in front of four cards of people. But that's the only time I've ever gotten upset at a tournament in like 30-something years. 40 years? 30 years? Oh, God, I'm old. 30 years.
There is this golden rule. You have 5 seconds to get that monkey off the shoulder. From the whole
people. It's like, I'm sorry. Our life is so good. We're so lucky if you're in the US or Denmark, like, you've got life on a silver platter. We're the luckiest people on earth.
Yeah.
Like, I really believe that. And there's so many people, especially me with what I do for a living, so many people would trade places with me. I mean, the minute I complain about having a bad round, people are at home thinking, you know what job I do 50 hours a week to support my family? Like, do you know what, you know, or do you know what I'm going through right now? Like, everyone's got it worse than us. We got it made.
So it's not wrong to say you're living the dream.
No, I'm living my dream because I'm doing exactly what I want to do. Back in December of, not last year, the year before, every single thing I owned and every single thing my girlfriend owned that we couldn't take with us, we either threw away or gave away. We don't own anything that's, like, we have a Jeep. We travel in a Jeep. Everything we own is in that Jeep. And I will say it right now, I will never have a home again. I will travel for the rest of my life.
Wow.
This is all I want to do with my life. It's just travel. It's not all disc golf. I'm planning on spending 3 or 4 months this winter. I want to go to South America, South Africa, and New Zealand. I'll golf in New Zealand, but I won't golf in the other places. So it's not all disc golf, but it's just being out and traveling. I always want to go to someplace new. I never want to eat at the same restaurant twice. I never want to go to the same city twice. I'm in Farmington, Missouri right now for a tournament. I've never been to Farmington, so that's where I want to go. I don't care if it's a pro tour event or a C tier. Oops. I know they'll jump back in. Sorry, I got a call come in.
No problem.
It doesn't matter, pro tour event or a C tier. I don't care. I only want to have different experiences. That's it.
And how does your plan go so far with the tournament, your tournament plan?
Oh, to win the 21?
Oh, yeah.
My plan is I'm going to win 21 tournaments in 21 states in 2021. I'm going to. I mean, I'm playing Masters Division. I'm 51, but I'm playing MP40 at most of them. But I'll win 21 tournaments in 21 states this year. If I don't, it'll be 18, or if I do, it'll be 22. But it's going to be very close. So far, it's going fine.
I'm happy to follow you from Denmark.
Oh, I mean, I'm a little behind schedule, but also it was winter. Because now, because comes, you know, spring, summer, and fall, there's tournaments every weekend. But the biggest thing with that is I'm driving a little bit out of my way at times. So I'm driving, if you were in the U.S., you would get this, but I'm driving from southeastern Missouri to eastern Nebraska for a one-day tournament just to get a different state in. Wow. That's probably a 12-hour drive for a one-day C-tier. But it doesn't matter. Like, that's part of my plan.
Nice. Scott, towards the ending here, I normally ask every guest I have on this show, what is a disc golf quote? I'm sure you are having one.
Yeah, I do. So this is what I put in my book. This is the most important thing that I live by. And I think it's one of the biggest things that people who aren't happy can do to find happiness, and disc golf is a place for this. Or let's not say disc golf, frisbee. Frisbee sports. So my favorite quote ever, I didn't write it, but it is, go where the love is, not where it's supposed to be.
Wow.
I think the idea is that we're conditioned to seek out love in those where we're told that it is. Like, it's going to be because your parents are supposed to be perfect, or your marriage is supposed to not fail, or your kids are supposed to be appreciative. I don't know, right? Like, the stuff, but that in the real world, that doesn't always happen. But there is love out there. So you just got to go where that love is and not stick to where it's supposed to be. So for me, I don't have family. I have my daughter. That's my family. She's in college in Wisconsin. So the idea for me is that, well, technically I have family. I have uncles and cousins, but that family isn't family that I want to associate with. They're just, I wish them the best, but they're not who I want to be in my world. but I don't need them. I got my Frisbee family. That's where the love is. Hmm. My love is with the people that I choose around the world that play disc sports. My girlfriend, of course. I've had other relationships with women who love me, who that's where the love is, and their families. So that's my belief, is if that the love's there, you just have to like accept where it comes from and not try to fit other people into a box, because they'll fail. They're human. Hmm.
I also need your soundtrack for your disc golf life.
Yeah, that's easy. It's My Way by Frank Sinatra. I think that's my best advice to every single person out there when you're trying to pursue your disc golf career, is that, and by the way, when I say my way, that doesn't mean throw your way. There's right and wrong ways to throw. You have to throw a correct way. But personality-wise, don't try to fit a cookie cutter mold. Don't try to fit yourself into a box that you think your sponsors need you to be. Go be you. And if you are you, some people will follow you and some people won't. Some people will buy the discs you recommend. Some people won't. But if you're you, you will build an audience of people that love you because you're being real. And as soon as you build that audience, then you can tell those people what things to buy, and those companies will pay you money, and that's where sponsorship comes in, and that's where your career is. It's not going to be in prize money for all but a couple people. It's in moving the meter for the companies that you represent. That's what sports is, unless you're in a major pro sport. That's how people make their money in sports. Every Olympic athlete can make a living off their sport without prize money. They can move the meter for companies because the people that follow them will listen to them. So you got to be yourself first. If you're not yourself, no one's going to listen to you. So be yourself, build your audience, and do it your way.
Something tells me that you're real. I think you're a wonderful person, and I'm so happy you wanted to do this in the middle of a tournament.
Oh, it's not in the middle. The tournament starts, the Flex starts today. But no, I don't care. When you play tournaments every day, it's just they're just a thing you do. So it wasn't a big deal stopping this. I mean, I'm playing a practice round here. I'll show you. Say hi.
Hi.
That's the term that I'm shooting around with. She's waiting for me to finish the round, finish the interview, so we can finish our practice round.
Hey,
she's
man.
Patient.
I won't take any more of your time.
You can use this footage any way you want to, as much as you want to. Do whatever you want with it. Cut it up.
I will. Yeah. I'll give you the link if you want to share it.
For sure. Of course.
You're so welcome. And again, thank you so much for your time. When I come to the U.S., whenever I can, I will. I'll give you a message, and hopefully we could do it. Yeah,
I would absolutely love that, and I would like to come to Europe next year. That would be my plan. I want to do the winter south of the equator, come to the U.S. for a little bit, and then go to Europe for a little bit. There's something I want to do with Kostoplast.
Oh yeah,
that we want to do. Yeah, I love Anders. I mean, I love all the people. I love Tomas and Svante. I love everybody. But I'm doing some projects with Anders for Kostoplast. I love the berg.
I could hook you up in Denmark with doing some clinics. No problem.
Well, perfect. Then that would be. I would love that. Absolutely.
Because I saw on your career PGGA that you have been in Sweden playing in 85?
I went out there for the WIFDIF. World Championships in 85 as a junior.
Yeah.
And I lost. I lost to a kid from Finland.
Those Finnish.
I know, right? No, I want to Finland, and I want to go to Estonia. I want to go everywhere, but I really want to get out there because it's booming out there. I want to go to the Czech Republic. Like, it's just insane. And eventually, like, everyone in the country is going to be so much better than me. But because the sport is somewhat new, I think I could still be competitive maybe for a little bit longer, but not in 3 or 4 years from now, I won't be. So I kind of want to get out there where I can still be competitive before they all pass me by.
But hey, man, that's
cool.
No
thank
problem.
You. Everything. Thanks,
again,
man.
Thank you, and have a great tournament.
Thank you very. Thank you so much. All right, bye.
Bye.
Du hørte her Scott Stokely berette om sine tidlige år som turneringsspiller, clinics, workshops, living the dream of disc golf. Dette afsnit er sponsoreret af Kaffeklubben. Drive ind forbi www.kaffevogne.dk. Brug rabatkoden PODCAST og få 20% på dejlig kaffe fra Sigafredo. Go where the love is, not where it's supposed to be.